309 here on WWLAMFM.com and always live on the free Odyssey app. About 51 minutes left to go before we hand it over to the second guest with Mike Dettillier and Bobby Hebert. They're on the Silver Slipper Casino in beautiful Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. The Saints got key players back for their battle with the Chargers. So we'll size up that game, those key players' performance and coaching. Plus, they'll break down LSU's trip to Texas to play the Aggies at 6:30, the Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show with head coach Dennis Allen. Hear from DA himself right here, WWL Radio exclusive. All the other sports reporters in town, listen to the Saints Coaches Show to hear what Dennis Allen has to say on Monday nights, and you should too. DA with Mike Haas and the Cajun Cannon, followed at 7 o'clock by a chat with defensive coordinator Joe Woods. And then after that, of course, we'll have Monday Night Football, Giants at Steelers, right here on WWL and the Odyssey app. A couple text messages left over from last hour that I want to kind of clear out and get the politics out of the way before we bring on Barry Keim at 325. He's a climatologist. He's going to talk to us about some disturbing new developments. Here's a text that says, Bill Clinton, George Bush, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and Kamala Harris have held power for 28 of the last 32 years. Yet all of them are blaming Trump, all the while claiming they have the answers to America's problems. Well, let's see. Yeah, I mean, America's got problems that are going to exist kind of no matter who's in the White House. And whoever's in the White House doesn't mean that all the problems are going to get taken care of because, you know, we have a divided government most often, more often than not. You know, we've got somebody in the White House and then the other party controls one or both chambers of Congress. That usually only lasts for, you know, one cycle, maybe 2 years. Plus, then we got 50, you know, different United States that all have their own governors and state houses and their own little senates and their own little parliamentary chambers and such. And, you know, it's difficult to just point to these five people that you named and say they claim they have all the answers to America's problems. I don't think I've ever heard any of those people say that they have all the answers to America's problems. And I don't think I've either heard them say that they blame Trump for everything that's wrong with America. But who's in charge really matters a lot. The character of a person informs how they're going to govern, which is why I really scratch my head when people say, I think Trump's character is god-awful. He sucks. His personality sucks. But I'm going to vote for his policies. I don't know. You can't really separate the policies from the personality, in my view. If we're talking about somebody whose personality sucks, I'd point to Kathy Griffin. I don't like Kathy Griffin. Somebody asked me last hour, oh, so Kathy Griffin's the victim and all this? No, of course not. I'm just saying, you know, the texter had said there were no consequences for Kathy Griffin's actions. So why should there be consequences for anybody's actions? And I said, no, that's not true. The reason that you're purposely forgetting what happened to Kathy Griffin is to excuse others who were going to do something the same or worse. And I'm not here for that. Here's a text that says, where'd that one go? Well, I don't know. I'll get back to the text in a minute. Oh, yeah. Here's Rick at the beach. He says, after the smoke clears, we'll have a deeply flawed, ticking time bomb president-elect no matter who wins. Our division of powers is supposed to minimize the damage after they go berserk. Also, the C word was common with Australian and South African guys I've known, but it's still embarrassing, Rick. Yeah. Look, I know people in other countries use the C word in a, you know, sort of more different context, a little more loosely about it. That doesn't mean that we have to tolerate Elon Musk's political action committee calling Kamala Harris the C word. You know, if you go down to the pub in Glasgow and some guy rolls up and says, hey, I love you, you C word, let me buy you a pint. Like, okay, that's very different from calling the Democratic nominee, the president of the United States, the C word. In your political advertising committees, political action committees advertising. Whack. We're not doing that. Let's get some phone calls. Here I see on line one from Metairie. Joe, good afternoon. Joe, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon. Ian, I'm just making a statement to my black brothers and sisters out there. Do you remember when Obama was in office for 8 years? over 4,000 black men, women, and children were killed in Chicago. Do you remember 4 years of Trump was the best 4 years of the black people's lives? Anybody that can vote for Kamala Harris, incompetent, it blows my mind when I listen to these people. That's
Joe,
my
statement.
Great. I want my black brothers and sisters to come up.
Hang on a second, Joe. I just want to make sure I understand the point you're trying to make. You're saying that because crime existed in Chicago during the 8 years that Barack Obama was president, that black people shouldn't vote for Kamala Harris?
I'm saying that Obama, 8 years, never raised a finger with all them murdered people, over 4,000 in Chicago. All I'm saying is,
what do you expect him to do, man? Like, he's the president. He's not the police chief. He's not the mayor. He doesn't even live in Chicago.
No,
what do you want him to do?
He never lifted a finger, Eon, to try to go to Chicago and talk with the police or anything. He did nothing.
Okay, I'll take you at that.
Blasting. Wait a minute, Eon. The wife and Obama together, they belittling the black men who's going to vote for Trump. Give me a break.
Yep, good. Thanks for your call, Joe. Not totally sure what the crux of that argument is.
Time Trump came to New Orleans and talked to Mayor Cantrell about our murders?
Yeah, what are you talking about? Like, why? You expect Barack Obama to do everything? You expect Barack Obama to stop crime in Chicago? You expect Barack Obama to lift every black family out of poverty? You expect him to create a billion black jobs for every person in this? Like, what do you? That's a weird thing to ask of the nation's first black president, Joe. Let's go to James and Harvey. James, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Wow.
Right?
I don't know where to go because I had a different subject, but now I got Joe on the mind. Joe, as a black man, let me tell you something. I don't know where to start. Joe, as a black man, I could not vote for Trump. I just can't. Before he was even elected, his first encounter with the federal government was to be sued for housing discrimination. When he settled and lost, his first comment was, you wouldn't want those people living next to you anyway. And these people were qualified for luxury housing. They had enough income to pay for his high-priced ghetto. The Central Park Five, this is all before the man even went into office. Mm-hmm. And my final big one I'd like to tell most brothers is don't listen to all of the hype. My biggest concern is employment. When black unemployment can equal the average of the national unemployment, then start trying to ask me for my vote. But when you're going to insult me, degrade me, and then ask me what have I got to lose, dude, please. I wish I could talk to you. I wish we could have a beer somewhere, and I'll tell you why I could not vote for that man. He messed up my comic. I'm going to talk about Bart Beatles. I'm sorry, man.
No, not at all. Take your time.
Okay, the Bart Beatles.
Oh, the Bark Beatles. Yeah, I wasn't sure what you were going to say there. Bark Beatles, yeah.
Okay, Bark Beatles, go ahead, you man. Got a guy coming on, I believe, about climate change.
Yeah.
I was reading an article about the bark beetle infestation in our state. They're killing a whole bunch of trees. And the reason they're able to do that is because the last 4 to 5 years, we've had some very, very stressful situations on our poor little trees. Mm-hmm. More hurricanes, bad soil conditions, and a drought. That lowered the immune system of most of our forests. And now the bark beetles are having a good time with our trees along with the Formosan termites. And the people say, what they got to do with the price of tea in China? Wait till we get some more Formosan termites in a year or two, and you'll know.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought up the... Yeah. Sure, yeah, well, I'll see if I can find an opportunity to talk to Barry Keim about that. Yeah, when you talk about... You know, the stress that the, heat waves and the droughts that are putting on our nation's forests, it creates the opportunity for these beetles to come in and basically kill the trees. And out in Colorado, where I grew up, there are entire mountain ranges that are just nothing but dead trees. And when I was a little boy growing up around there, these were, you know, these vibrant forests with lots of green pine needles and colorful aspen trees. And a lot of that is gone because of these beetle invasions. And that was, you know, I think that really kind of came onto my radar maybe 10 or 15 years ago. I did not anticipate that that same problem was going to be coming to Louisiana. I thought that was a thing that was only happening in the Mountain West. But as we will learn from Mr. Kime in just a couple minutes here, forests all over the world are in big trouble. They're facing kind of the same issue. Let's real quick, James, on the North Shore. I don't have a ton of time here. I got to get to Mr. Kime, but I did want to get you in before we step aside. What's on your mind?
All right, well, first, man, black beetles, they're on my grass all the time out here. I try to smoke them when I see them. Trump and his black brothers, and Carson is what comes to mind when I think of Trump and what he would do for black brothers. I wanted to bring up last night with the interview on 60 Minutes of the guy talking about his plans for deportation, the guy who will be the head of Trump's deportation.
Right.
Go ahead. I need to watch the 60 Minutes interview on it. I had to call my aunt this morning. She's an immigration lawyer in Washington, D.C., because my last name is Spanish, to check to make sure that me and my daughter don't somehow end up getting deported if Trump gets elected. And another thing, while families were bonding with Taylor Swift over the weekend, last night, me and my mom got the bond over James Carville, his CNN special. And I tell you what, man, I never would have thought. The things I heard come out of my mom's mouth last night about John's good things, positive. You know, me and my mom used to go back and forth. She's a little more on Trump's side, I'm on the Harris side. We had so much agreement last night. And you hear it from a James. James is a very intelligent man. Listen to James when they speak. James from Harvey, James from the North Shore. And another thing, Ian, please, tomorrow, give us some spookiness. Keep the tradition alive.
All right, all right. I saw your text earlier. I'll try and do something a little bit spooky tomorrow. I didn't have time to kind of arrange the whole Halloween special that I usually do because I'm not going to be hosting on Halloween Day. Scoot's coming back on Wednesday, and I'm not going to be kind of calling the shots about what we're doing programmatically at the end of this week. But for you, James, I'll try and find something spooky that we can do just for a little bit tomorrow. Maybe we'll give ourselves a break. With 7 days left of the election, God knows we need it. We'll step away here and get a look at traffic with your boy, Joe Cardosi. And when we come back, we'll be speaking to climatologist Barry Kime. The world's forests absorbed almost no carbon dioxide last year. That is extremely whack, and it is scaring the pants off Earth systems scientists. Is the news really as bad as it sounds? What's going on here? There's a little bit of disagreement among the climate scientist community, so we trust Mr. Kime, and we'll hear what he has to say. I'll be right back after this on WWLAMFM.com.
Wait, Ian, before you go, I just have to say, I love Joe's pronunciation of your name, Ian.
Is there anybody's name that he can pronounce correctly? Just one. Just give me one.
I'm not sure, Ian.
329 on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Reading now from The Guardian, which, if you don't know, is a British newspaper. Article says, it begins each day at nightfall. As the light disappears, billions of zooplankton, crustaceans, and other marine organisms rise to the ocean surface to feed on microscopic algae and then return to the depths at sunrise. And the waste from this frenzy, which is Earth's largest migration of creatures, sinks to the ocean floor. It removes millions of tons of carbon from the atmosphere each year. This activity is one of thousands of natural processes that regulate the Earth's climate. Together, the planet's oceans, forests, soils, and other natural carbon sinks absorb about half of all human emissions. But as the Earth heats up, scientists are increasingly concerned that those crucial processes are breaking down. In 2023, the hottest year ever recorded, preliminary findings by an international team of researchers show that the amount of carbon absorbed by land has temporarily collapsed, and that the final result was that forest, plants, and soil, as a net category, absorbed almost no carbon. The director of the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research says it this way. We are seeing cracks in the resilience of the Earth's systems. We are seeing massive cracks on land. Terrestrial ecosystems are losing their carbon store and carbon uptake capacity, but the oceans are also showing signs of instability. Nature has so far balanced our abuse, but this is coming to an end. To help us understand this, we welcome climatologist Barry Keim to the show. Barry, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, Barry's a little informal. Do you prefer doctor or is Barry okay?
Oh, Barry's great.
Word. Okay. It seems, and as a layperson, it seems to me it's not quite correct to say that nature absorbed no carbon. It's just that it's not absorbing more than we're emitting, right? Like, this is about gross versus net. Like, if you're pouring water into a pool, and at the same time you're pumping water out of the pool, and then suddenly your pump becomes less efficient, and the amount of water that you're pumping out matches what you're putting in, then you could say we've not pumped any water out of this pool, even though you have, because the net amount of water in the pool is the same. Is that a good metaphor? Is there something about this I'm missing?
That was beautiful. It couldn't have been said any better. I mean, carbon is a flux. There's incoming sources, there's outgoing sources, and depending on how much you have incoming versus how much you have outgoing, that's what you have left. And that's exactly the way you stated that with the pool. It was a great metaphor and entirely appropriate in this particular situation. So I would argue some of the wording in that article is a little bit misleading, mm-hmm. but it does make an important point that, there are thousands of processes, maybe hundreds of thousands, maybe even more than that, that are taking place naturally within our environment that have some impact on what our atmospheric chemistry actually looks like and how warm our planet is. And what they're basically pointing out, though, is that this is unstable and perhaps a little bit unpredictable. And as a result, it's leaving us a little bit hamstrung as we move forward.
Okay, great. People always say, you don't have to take the expert's word for it. Go and do your own research, which always freaks me out a little bit because I think people don't understand what that means and what you're asking of yourself when you go do your own research. So I saw this article and I said, I wonder what other scientists think about that. I found a piece from Conservation International that said basically the same thing you did. The thrust of the article is on point, but there's a couple things that they might be kind of myopic about. So this article elicits a lot of sort of panic from scientists on social media. They say this could lead to widespread ecosystem collapse, within a decade. Very soon. You got other scientists who are saying, hold your horses, there is a lot of increase in carbon sink in places where forests are growing and the growing season is getting longer and there's more rainfall, and that this is all really important for scientists to take note of, but it's not cause for more despair than anything else that's been happening with the climate lately. So what's your take? Is this as scary as it sounds, or are you of the mind that no, this is kind of actually par for the course?
Well, it's cause for concern, but not panic. I mean, what happened was 2023 was a very bad year. And I think what the concern is this some indication of what the future holds? And I'm not sure that's the case. I mean, 2023 was a pretty special year. It was the warmest on record. We had an El Nino taking place. You know how crazy the weather was here. I mean, it was unprecedented summer here last year. And what happened, we had forest fires all over the place. We had those big fires up in Canada. So we had a lot of unusual things that went on last year. And in the end, the vegetation across the globe just didn't take in nearly as much carbon as it normally does. In fact, it only took up about 25% of what it normally does in a given year. And that is a pretty big deal. But, is this an indication of what the future really holds? Or was that just a one-off, a flukish year? I mean, I want to believe it's just a fluke. It may be a harbinger for what the future has coming for us, but there's so many uncertainties. And as I said, there literally are thousands, maybe tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of processes, many of which we don't even fully understand, mm-hmm. that play a role in regulating Earth's climate. So. Am I concerned? Yeah, I am a little concerned. Am I panicking? Absolutely not.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned, people, even scientists, the people who work really hard on this and they've got all the degrees and they've got all the resources and they go to conferences and they do experiments. The way that carbon moves through our environment still isn't really well understood, which I guess would would contribute to the fact that none of this has been factored in. Like in the Guardian article, you got this guy from the French Laboratory for Climate and Environmental Sciences. He says none of the models have this factored in. Well, Barry, why is that? Why don't the models account for the fact that these natural carbon sinks become less efficient as they are overwhelmed by drought or bark beetles or whatever the environmental stressors are? How come the models didn't plan for that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the bark beetles, because it just shows you how complicated some of this stuff gets. You push a button over here and you make six things happen over there, and you had this cascading effect. So it does get pretty wild pretty quickly. I mean, I think the bottom line is we just don't understand this well enough to model it accurately. And like I said, I work with this guy when I was on the faculty at the University of New Hampshire, and he was a brilliant mathematician, Stanford graduate, PhD, and he worked with cancer and did all these amazing things. Well, we pulled him into our climate group, and he says, "Oh my goodness, this climate stuff is the most complicated stuff I've ever had to work on." And like I said, he was working with down at the cellular level with the folks in biology doing cancer research. So that just gives you some idea of just how complicated this particular issue is. Now, I mean, there's little doubt we're changing the atmospheric chemistry. I mean, yeah, we're pumping out all this CO2 and other greenhouse gases. The CO2 level back in the 1850s, 1860s, was about 280 parts per million, and it's now up at 419 parts per million. So another way of thinking about it is we've added an additional 50% of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. So we're 150% of normal, relative to pre-industrial levels. And we're performing this very bizarre global experiment where we don't really fully understand what all the outcomes are going to be, which, in and of itself is a little scary. But, I mean, I'm not sure it's maybe not as much doom and gloom as some people are projecting. But, some of the impacts are not good. And, here in Louisiana, we could very well be the most vulnerable state in the nation to climate change, given the way our coast is situated right near sea level.
Okay. I hadn't actually really planned to ask you about this, but this is just where we're at. The AMOC, the Atlantic Meridional, is how do you say that?
I don't know too much about that, but are we talking about the ocean circulation here?
Yeah. The ocean current system that takes warm air up from the tropics, guns it through the Gulf of Mexico, and then goes up, past New England,
Europe,
and then, then it cools off and it sinks back down and it goes back to... This is basically why Europe has the sort of temperate climate that it does, that it has for the last 13,000 years, is because of this ocean current system that's circulating warm and cold water in the Atlantic Ocean. Some of the same pieces that are talking about these carbon sink issues are pointing to real problems with this ocean current and the sort of similar warning that its collapse is closer than we think. Is this within your field of study? What do you think about this?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is what you're referring to is called the thermohaline circulation, which is how all the ocean basins are all interconnected. When we talk about the Gulf Stream and the North Atlantic Drift and all that kind of stuff, these are all intertwined oceanic currents. Some of these currents run along the surface. When the water properties change, as the salinity changes and the temperature changes, the water gets heavy and it sinks, and then it runs along the bottom of the ocean. And all these ocean basins are way more interconnected than we ever thought they were before. But, yeah, if the circulation changes in any major substantive way, it can have a dramatic impact on what the global climate looks like. And
I'm sorry to interrupt, Barry, but does that look like? Like, kind of, can you get specific for us? I mean, I would basically understand, like, okay, Europe will go into an ice age. The sort of global north will have a lot colder climates than we're used to. There will be impacts on wildlife, on agriculture. Spell out like what this means for regular people.
Okay, well, let's use Europe as an example. I think that's a great one. If that North Atlantic Drift and the Gulf Stream, as we like to refer to it, were to basically shut down. Okay, so think about London, UK. Okay, London, England. It's at a latitude. It's at about 52 2 degrees latitude, I believe, which is way further north. I mean, New York City is only at about 40 degrees latitude. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's see, Seattle, Washington is at about, what, 46 degrees or something to that effect. So London is pretty far north. You're kind of like central Canada. But think about how mild the climate is in London. I mean, they hardly ever get any snow there just because it's too mild. I mean, it hardly ever gets below zero. It's a very maritime climate. But it also has that warm water being drug up there, and it really modifies the climate of not only the UK, but really all of Western Europe. It makes it way milder than it should be for the, you know, how far off the equator, how high the latitudes are. If we shut down that ocean current out there, it's going to turn that area into the deep freeze, and it's not going to have that mild climate any longer. And obviously, that would be a big deal to the whole world's economic system and, you know, how the world works. So I think that's, you know, that's a really easy, straightforward one. But we have all these currents in all the basins doing, you know, very similar kinds of things. And you know, we have a cold water current off of our coast, on the West Coast, rather. You know, from Seattle down to, you know, to Los Angeles and San Diego. And if we shut that down, that's going to become a heck of a lot warmer than it currently is. So those currents play a very big role, and that is part of the climate system. And, you know, if we, you know, and just show you how intertwined these things are, as the climate is warming, we'll be melting the glaciers in, let's say, Greenland. We're dumping all this fresh water into the Atlantic Ocean, you know, right where that North Atlantic Drift passes. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we may shut down that current, and that's going to affect Europe and do all those things that we were just talking about. So the climate system, very, very, very complex. There's so many moving parts that it's hard to wrap your hands around all of them. And this is where some of the limitations are in these models. These models literally have billions of equations to try to simulate the atmosphere, the ocean atmosphere system, to try to help us help us predict weather and predict climate as well.
Barry, can I keep you just about another 10 minutes here?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, great. I got two quick things I want to ask you and hopefully end on sort of a happier note. My guest is climatologist Dr. Barry Keim. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot. He'll be back on Wednesday. I got just about 17 minutes left here before we hand it off to the news. And after that is the second guest with Bobby and Mike out in the Silver Slipper Casino. Don't forget, we got the Saints Coaches Show tonight. Dennis Allen is going to be on at 6:30. Everybody's going to be tuning in for this one. All the other sports media people in Louisiana listen to WWL on Monday nights so they can hear from Dennis Allen, and you should too. Be right back after this. Don't go anywhere. 3:49 here on WWL, wrapping up with climatologist Dr. Barry Keim. Barry and I have been discussing this article in the Guardian newspaper about how Earth's forests have, you know, stopped absorbing CO2 last year. There's a net zero absorption of carbon dioxide emissions. Was that just last year? Well, we see that again this year, the next 5 years. We don't really know. Time will tell. But if we do see that trend continue, it's pretty much curtains for us being able to stave off the sort of worst effects of climate change. But doctor, just with the last couple minutes that we have here, I just wanted to ask you, despite these challenges that we have, you know, both with the sort of international climate agreements and getting these countries to agree to these targets and then actually do the work to hit them, despite the challenges that we may face with the natural systems, you know, the ocean and land-based carbon sinks, you know, sort of faltering, at least in the last year, are there reasons to be hopeful about our ability to use nature to fight climate change, or the worst effects of it anyway?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. And I would say the answer is yes, there is hope. And the one thing I would point to is this is, you know, going back some decades now when we recognized that ozone was a problem. And when I say ozone, I'm not talking about ozone down in the troposphere, the lowest layers of the atmosphere. I'm talking about the ozone layer in the stratosphere that we were, you know, all concerned about. And we all collectively, when I say all we, meaning society in general, the whole globe, recognized that we had a serious international problem. They put together what's called the Montreal Protocol in 1989, and it was an international agreement to basically stop producing all these CFCs, chlorofluorocarbons, mm-hmm. you know, better known as Freon. It's It's also used as a microchip cleaner, so on and so forth. So we recognize it as a problem, and we dialed that back to the point to where we essentially quit destroying the ozone layer, at least in the dramatic way that we were doing it back in the 70s and 1980s. Mm-hmm. So that's the one thing I always point to, that when society fully realizes that we have a problem and our future rests on international agreements, we can actually pull something off. And that's my hope, is that if this just continues to spiral out of control, I'm not saying it's going to, but if it did, I would think that we could get everybody. I mean, that's an example. We can point to that as one thing that we've done where everybody recognized we had a problem. We all hunkered down and made a difference and basically phased that out. So that's where I see the biggest hope. Otherwise, I mean, we're completely, addicted to fossil fuels. I think we've made at least a half a step in the direction of moving off of that and getting on to, more electric, powered cars and things like that. Of course, that has its host of problems too. Mm-hmm. But I've asked a few questions about that, and this was kind of interesting, in terms of obviously the energy, the electricity used to charge up your car ultimately probably has some fossil fuel behind it to generate the electricity, and I was just kind of wondering, well, what is the miles per gallon equivalent, right? And it's the average, I believe, was about 75 miles per gallon if you drive an electric car relative to a gas-powered car. So that's a pretty darn big improvement.
Wow.
So we are moving in that general direction. I mean, we're obviously not there yet. And like I said, all these batteries have other problems. We got to figure those out. But anyway, there's definitely hope. There's reason to be hopeful.
Well, we will speak to you again, and hopefully we'll have more good news to talk about, things that are moving in the right direction. My guest is Dr. Barry Keim, WWL's favorite climatologist. Nice to speak to you again, Barry. Have a great week.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Adios, amigo. All right, look, it's been kind of a tough day talking about the climate change, talking about these difficult political narratives. I thought we would end the show with one more time just running you through a sort of highlight reel on what Dave Cohen did last Friday when he kind of unexpectedly found himself having to do the traffic reporting all afternoon in the midst of all the Taylor Swift craziness and the Taylor Swift traffic. Dave Cohen took a more sort of creative approach to his traffic reports, which I think is very funny. I'll share it with you now.
From the Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters WWL Traffic Center, I'm Dave Cohen. Good luck finding a blank space in the traffic jams we're seeing in the CBD and Warehouse District with all the Taylor Swift fans. From the Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters WWL Traffic Center, I'm Dave Cohen. Traffic is not moving swiftly in and around the CBD and Warehouse District with a flood of Taylor Swift fans. From the Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters WWL Traffic Center, I'm Dave Cohen. May feel like you're never, ever, ever going anywhere on surface streets downtown and in the Warehouse District with heavy Taylor Swift fan traffic. From the Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters WWL Traffic Center, I'm Dave Cohen. Better bring your patience if you're heading downtown. It may not take a fortnight, but you will be finding very heavy delays heading into the CBD from all directions and on surface streets thanks to the Taylor Swift fan traffic. From the Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters WWL Traffic Center, I'm Dave Cohen. Seeing heavy traffic in the downtown area ahead of the Taylor Swift concert, better get ready for it. Swifties in the CBD and Warehouse District have traffic barely moving. From the Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters WWL Traffic Center, I'm Dave Cohen. Traffic is jammed up in all directions heading into and around downtown New Orleans, so if your end game is getting into the CBD, expect delays. From the Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters WWL Traffic Center, I'm Dave Cohen. It's not your karma. Everyone is stuck in traffic now trying to get into downtown New Orleans with all the Taylor Swift fans in town for tonight's concert. From the Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters WWL Traffic Center, I'm Dave Cohen. I don't know about cruel summer, but the traffic is cruel right now if you're trying to get into downtown New Orleans with all the Taylor Swift traffic. From the Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters WWL Traffic Center, I'm Dave Cohen. It's no love story with the traffic downtown with all the Taylor Swift fans and slow moving on surface streets to get here.
I love it. I think that is delightful. I was howling at my desk last Friday when I heard that. Hey, you know, I've been talking on the show about how I really like this Dr. Pepper creamy coconut flavor. I got a text out of nowhere that says, "Hey, Ian, I bought a 12-pack of Dr. Pepper creamy coconut. I now have 11 cans of creamy coconut Dr. Pepper that will be used for filling my bong reservoir? No, man, you're supposed to drink it. What are you doing? If you're not going to drink it, give it to me before you put it in the bong. Good Lord, what are we doing here, people? We'll get a look at actual traffic with Joe Carosi, and I'll be back to say goodbye. Ian Hoke, be right back. All right, coming up on the show tomorrow at 3:20, I'm going to talk to Dr. Patrick Porter. Dr. Porter is an expert in brain health, founder of a company called Brain Tap. We're going to be talking about doom scrolling. If you don't know what that is, that's okay. We'll explain it, but I promise you, you're already doing it. You know when you just sit on your phone and you just scroll and scroll and scroll and read about all the terrible things and all the bad news and all the nasty politics in our world? That's doom scrolling. And according to Dr. Patrick Porter, that might be triggering a fight or flight response in your brain. And all that fight or flight responding might actually be causing damage to your noggin. So we'll talk to him about that. And of course, we'll touch on politics and a little bit more. We'll try to have a good time. But hey, we got 8 days left. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. Thanks for sticking around. I'll see you again tomorrow. Ciao.